out front ahead of his time, creative arranger, songwriter, pianist, vocalist, and innovator, Henry Slaughter is here for the hour.
Welcome to Daniel Britt and Friends, an hour of good music and fun conversations featuring gospel music's brightest new artists, as well as legendary tributes and memories from its past. Now, here is Daniel Britt.
It's always an honor to talk to pioneers in our field of gospel music, those who've paved the way and made such heavy contributions to this art form, but also to spreading the gospel. When I say the names Henry and Hazel Slaughter, any fan of gospel music should know the history behind these people, and I want to introduce them to you, and I think by the end of this program, we will all have a great respect and admiration for what they've done. Henry Slaughter's on the phone with me right now, and Henry, it is such an honor to talk to you. I've followed the history of your career and undoubtedly the history of many groups in gospel music that you've had your hand in, so welcome.
Well, thank you very much. I'm glad to share some time with you.
We can talk about the cathedrals. We can talk about Akron, Ohio. We can talk about, before that, the Weatherfords and then the Imperials and then the songwriting. But I'd always kind of like to go back to the beginning. And in the beginning was a little boy named Henry. And let's go back to where you lived, where you grew up, and what life was like for your early years.
I was born in the Tobacco Lands of North Carolina in 1927, January the 9th. And grew up on a tobacco farm in a community, and just walk a distance of a little Baptist church up the road. And that's where it all, and the radio, we got a radio in the late 30s there, I was 9 or 10 years old. And about 1940, I heard my first gospel quartet broadcast and fell in love with the music.
Wow. And you were just not even a teenager, really, probably at that point, right?
Yeah, I was probably about the time I became a teenager when I heard yeah. Some choir. Now, we sang some of the gospel song convention music at our little church there. My uncle was a singing school teacher, and then he got us into singing that. And his son was more in the church music, and so I had a good, healthy background in both. I took the classical piano. The only music that I had was the classical method and the training to read music. So it all came together. Before right about the time I was becoming a teenager.
Yeah. Well, I am originally from Georgia, but when I moved to North Carolina, where I currently live, the president of our company, and I work in radio, obviously, said to me, "You're in North Carolina. There are quartet men on every street corner singing for their supper." and this is a state with major contributions to gospel music, and so it's no surprise that North Carolina was your home state.
Well, I didn't know, and I was not acquainted with anything going on in the world, close to the world of gospel music or the convention music publishers, anything like that. I just lived off I was on the fringe of it. And I suppose in areas about 50 or 60 miles from the back west and right. southeast, right. there was a very healthy gospel music country, and I didn't even know anything about it, of course, until I was upgrown.
And singing schools were a major part. And there are some singing, especially Stamps Baxter is one of the names that we still remember today as is still going on. But singing schools were a pretty big deal back in your day and a wonderful opportunity for education. And as Ben Spear has told us, learning the rudiments of music and understanding how to hone the talent. And you went off to singing school, right?
Well, I didn't grow up in an atmosphere of the singing school and the thing. Yeah, I think my uncle, he taught some in some, I don't even know where, maybe some churches and that type of thing, but he was not known. He was the backup farmer just like we were. Uh-huh. But he did got his music education in singing school. And but I didn't know anything. When I heard about the group broadcasting, I sent and got all the song, but I heard a couple of times I saw them, and and they were selling their songbooks. I got those, and by the time I was 15 years old, I had ordered everything that Stamps Baxter had and was acquainting myself with the music, was playing it and singing it at home, and listened to it on the radio. And then when I was finishing school, I already decided I wanted to pursue this.
Right.
And I thought I could. I wrote the group, the quartet, and got them to send me information about us in a school. And then they told me about the information. Like I got was they had a school in Chattanooga and one in Dallas. One in Chattanooga for 2 weeks, normal, and then one in Texas was for 3.
Yeah.
And so as soon as I finished school, my first journey was to go to Chattanooga, Tennessee, where they had Stamps Baxter. Normal. I really thought when I went I was going to get discovered, but when I got there I discovered I was not ready for prime time, and so that was a process then. I stayed in Chattanooga and studied privately for 3 months, and I was waiting on I was 18 and waiting for the draft, and I had to get that behind me. I didn't think I'd pass the physical, but I did. And so everything had to be put off for about 18 months until I did my time.
Right, right. Yeah. Well, you know, and you said something very interesting there about you weren't ready for prime time. What do you think about today's kids from today who aspire to do whatever, but primarily music, and you see these talent shows on TV where you have people coming out and standing in lines that are city blocks wide and long for auditions to do something that they're just really not ready for. Do you think that, was it a blow to your, maybe your ego, your confidence to realize you weren't quite ready?
Well, I learned 2 things. I learned that it was not much money in it, and it was, if you was going to go into it, you did it because you loved to do it, and there were people in it, and there were, if I'd have known the economics of it, of course, in those days, $20 or $25 a week was a pretty good job. My first job with Stamps Baxter as a shipping clerk was $25 a week. And of course that was but that was a lot better than being on the tobacco farm. But I really all my time in the Army, I didn't expect to go forward. I figured that there's a better way, and I would do my music, but I wouldn't necessarily go forward pursue it as a career. But it there was another story how it all evolved, that that was a path for me to take. But I think that it sounds to me like what I know of the music business to all those coming into it now, those of us who aspire to have a career in the music of that day, they set themselves out to prepare themselves more than they do today. I think from 1960 on, they began to sing by ear and learn songs off of other folks' records, and they didn't, they were not readers. Those of us who came through the 40s and 50s there, we had to know, we had to be trained and had to know what we were doing, because we required that we be musically educated.
Henry Slaughter, my guest today on Daniel Britt and Friends, back to an early Gaither homecoming taping with Henry and Hazel.
Since Jesus came and found me and put his arms around me, and all my binding fetters took away. Although I've loved him dearly and trusted him sincerely, I've never loved him better than today. Sweet.
Henry and Hazel Slaughter with the Gaither Homecoming Friends. And Henry is my guest today on Daniel Britt and Friends.
What year then was it that the Weatherfords was the first major break for you?
No, I started out in 1947, my first group that came out of service. First year was 1947. I joined a group, the Stamps Baxter Company group. In those days, most of the traveling radio were sponsored by or undergirded by and helped by the music companies, and we represented the Stamps Baxter Company. And that was a group started in Arkansas, and I wrote the company about it after I came out of service about taking my GI Bill and taking some, coming there and doing some more training, maybe piano and some other music, but basically to become a piano technician. Huh. And that way they hadn't made plans there at that time and hadn't had it installed. And there was a quartet started up in Arkansas, and they thought, well, I could come by and work until the school opened. But I got through the quartet and started doing it. I said, this is what I always wanted to do, and I'll just do this for a while. And that group then went on to Texas, where I stayed with them for about 5 years and broadcasting in the late 40s. And that was my experience and all of it when I got the call to go to Ohio with join the Weatherfords.
Gotcha.
So I had 5, 6, 7 years of experience before I went with the Weatherfords.
So once you set out and you started traveling and singing and doing this thing, you know, 2 weeks went by, 3 weeks went by. At what point did it hit you that, A, this is a lot more harder or difficult or just different than what I expected, or B, this is the best thing. I'm glad I made this choice.
Well, I think I was just falling. I had desired so much in my teenage years that, you know, like from 13 to 18, and anyway, that's what I wanted to do. And I was, I thought, well, hey, I'm doing it. But I saw immediately that it was a lot cruder, and it was hard work, and not much reward. But there were those who did it. We had a passion to do it. We
right.
just that we'd rather do that than anything else. And I
right.
think that's so. And I saw so many who were talented people, and who wanted to be in it. They wanted to. We were wanted to see it grow to the point that it was worthwhile financially. But I think all the guys that I knew, they just did it out of the love for doing it. And just if they could get enough to keep body and soul together, so be it. And I found out later that country music was very much on the same thing financially. Although it's coming along, we were doing about the same thing financially.
Henry Slaughter, and a lot of the songs we're hearing today, comes from Slaughterite's Imperial Singing. On Daniel Britt and Friends.
God takes good care of me, care of me. God takes real good care of me. Every day, His goodness I can see.
I can see.
I serve Him with gladness. I have no me. Why should I worry? Why should I fret?
Faith in my heart
to strengthen every day.
His guiding light, each step along the way. To God I can pray. His goodness and His mercy every day is mine. And I can call on Jesus
anytime. You see,
God takes good
trouble.
comes in this world today.
But he's never been too busy to hear me when I pray, you see.
God takes good care of me. God takes good care of me.
Every day I'm singing praise to his name, because the Lord is taking care of me.
Henry Slaughter is my guest today. You're listening to Daniel Britt and Friends, and we're going back and retracing his steps. And at some point, now we're kind of talking about the Weatherfords, joining the Weatherfords there in Ohio. And at what point did you meet and marry Hazel?
Well, I had left gospel quartet music in 51, and I felt like that the Lord had something else for me to do. And so I went on an evangelistic field with a minister, and doing this music for him, playing the piano and singing and so forth. And I met Hazel in the summer of and on the evangelistic field. And I really had at that point that was seeking my way in the church music work, and not necessarily on the road with gospel groups. I thought that was the direction for me to go. But a couple of years of that kind of proved that was not the direction thing for me either. And I, you know, I was far work with the churches and maybe teach and that type of thing, but that didn't work out financially either. And so I found myself back in the Texas and playing for the group. But then, we sang together, and we felt like there was something here that was worthwhile. We had good response, and all the way until we when we got to, it blossomed when we got to the cathedral. And as I playing the piano for the Weatherfords and doing some work with the Humberts, we discovered that we had something that people would buy.
Yeah. When did you start writing music?
I first in the late 40s, I really began by arranging. That's the era that, like in 47, 48, the quartets began to do arrangements of even the convention songs we were doing.
Right.
And we were picking up things from records, from black gospel, and anywhere we could find anything that was new or spiritual that and go on our concert program. And it required that somebody sit down and write it out for these guys, because most they didn't learn so much by ear in those days as they did by somebody putting it down on paper. So I put this stuff down on paper and was doing a lot of arranging that way. And from that, I discovered that I could write some. And I wrote a little bit in the early 50s. I would think it was when I began to feel like I could write something, and I would say the 52 and 53, and the things that I wrote then stayed in the piano bench, and because I have anybody to sing them, you know. But I would say about in 53, my first song that "What a Precious Friend Is He," which is the best thing I ever written. Uh-huh. That was a 51, 51, 52.
Yep.
1952, and from then on, I began to write a few things along the way.
Henry Slaughter, my guest today on Daniel Britt and Friends. Let's go back to 2006. It was late that year at the National Quartet Convention. I sat down with Lily Fern Weatherford, her son Steve Weatherford, and Mike Allen to talk about Weatherford's history, and Henry came up in conversation.
And so Henry joined at what time?
Henry came in right after Glenn came in.
About 58, 59?
Probably so, because we were there. That group sang together for 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
Armin Morales, Glenn Payne, Earl and I, and Henry Slaughter playing the piano. And we moved to Akron in 53. So it was that would make it about 55, wouldn't it, that they were together with us?
1855 or 1955?
Did you recognize what you had in Henry Slaughter when you hired him?
Yes. We knew we had a good piano player, but there's one thing that we all did not recognize, and we've all talked at different times, even when Glenn was still alive and when we were together, Glenn and Armin and Henry, or even separately, we all said we didn't realize what we had then.
Mm-hmm.
But we had a different sound. It was, we were everybody says that we were 10 or 15 years ahead of our time. Mm-hmm. And we didn't realize what a statement we were making at that time. But apparently it was a good one. So,
did he do a lot of songwriting for the group?
Yes. We did a lot of Henry's songs. Mm-hmm. I don't think he wrote that many while he was... Well, he wrote some while he was with us, but he brought songs to us. He brought What a Precious Friend with him when we sang it first time.
I think that can't hurt to have kind of a built-in songwriter. I mean, Greater Vision with Rodney
and
Griffin.
And he was a great arranger.
Yeah.
Henry
yeah.
had a memory that he knew what your voice range was. And he would sit down and write out your part, and then we'd rehearse it. And if you get together to rehearse with the group, and they say, "You're on my part," and he'd say, "It's right here."
Lily Fern and Mike Allen and her son Steve around the table a few years ago. I was at the National Quartet Convention, and we were retracing kind of the Weatherford's history and talking about how significant that group. And honestly, for people in the Southeast, the Weatherfords were more of ambassadors, like you say, in Ohio and in the Midwest and even in the West Coast a little bit more maybe than the Deep South.
Yes. Yes.
But they did some major, they had some major contributions as well. And your time with them, I'm sure, was very rich. She talks about her husband, Earl, and the stickler he was for music. Did you collaborate well with him? True to
And I went with them. They were, and the first thing I did was to go with their repertoire, what they were doing.
Yeah.
And they were doing some nice things. Danny Coker had been with a woman. He had taught him some things. Usually that musician, they had certain ways of doing things they just kind of fell into and redid off music. But some of that thing they were picking up from other people too, but they had no one that was particular arranging. So my first thing was to do is just to fall into what they were doing. And then they knew that I wrote and arranged, and they looked to me to begin to put some things together. Yeah. And I don't think I never did just say that, hey, let's do these songs. And it was not Earl saying, let's get an arrangement of this or anything like that. I just picked up some things that I felt like that they would, and I presented it to them and see if they liked it or not, whether they cared to do it. And fortunate enough that they decided, they never turned out anything I gave them when I wrote it or arranged it. There was an occasion that so there was a music company that had got Earl to do a record, and they sent him a whole bunch of songs, and this guy had done scores in New York City on some Broadway type of music, pop music, but he started mm-hmm. writing some gospel or sacred music, mm-hmm. and it was up to me to take those songs and adapt them and arrange them for the quartet, and I think through that they found out that my writing and arranging and that they would, and also Glenn Payne. I worked with Glenn Payne back in Texas, and he knew that I was an arranger.
Yeah.
And so that I was already known as that, and they expected me to contribute. I didn't say what Earl and him, the way they wanted to do a song. We did both. I didn't interfere with his them writing in the thing or wanting to do a song a certain way. Uh-huh. I tried to help them with it if I could in the thing, but when I wrote things down, you know, they either bought it or didn't buy it, you know, which I don't remember ever turning anything down that I felt like that they would be good for them to even if not program but to record. Now, they knew the stuff that I wrote would be good for recordings, if not for the stage.
Right. Well, and the song that you talked about, What a Precious Friend Is He, my goodness, can you even hear that song any other way than with Lily Fern's voice doing that lead on that chorus? I mean, it's just, that seems so definitive, and that song, it's just hard to imagine anybody else really performing that quite the same way as that lineup.
Well, I agree. I think now the Imperials recorded, we recorded the same arrangement on the thing.
Uh-huh.
But I really think that there was, they didn't touch it as well as the Weatherfords, I think it proves also that anyone, when a song is done and it's done the way it, and sometimes a group will do things. Other groups did things. I heard Statesman do things. It could not be. You could not take that song and change it, the arrangement, anything. Like Prayers of Keys in Heaven, songs like that.
Right.
Yeah, you could not improve upon it. I think that's true with pop music, all kind of music. It may cover them, but they're not covered as well as the original. But I think the pattern of that arrangement, and Hazel and I sang it for, you know, years too, and, it was a success, but it was still basically the same arrangement.
And I can hear, you know, just the stair step of those notes coming down into the, I guess what you call the chorus there. I mean, that harmony, to me, to this day, it still sounds like that was ahead of its time for that style of music.
Well, yes. But it took, now that piano, when I wrote that song, I was in Mississippi. And went back to Texas, and I was staying there. I worked with the Ozarks again, and Glenn Payne was there, and I never did pull it out of the piano bench because it was ahead of them, ahead of that time.
Yeah.
And they could have done it, of course, but they could have not, but it was not the time for it.
Right.
And, it stayed in the piano bench for 6 years until we got to Ohio. And, Hazel and I sang it one night at a rally, Rex Humbert Riley and the Weatherfords were there. And when they heard it, they said, Lily Fern said, I want to sing that.
Yeah,
and when she really learned to sing it after the way Hazel sang it, she did her best to sing it the same way. It was a set. It was a God thing, and God just it was God. It was a powerful message to us, the Lord speaking to us, but we didn't use it because with Hazel we didn't do much singing. We just sang a little bit at church, you know.
Right,
but when we got to Ohio, we had the opportunity to expand more on that, and I didn't even take it out. I wasn't even showing it probably to the Weathermans had it not been just the case. Yeah. It just things happened together that they heard it and wanted to do it, and we were looking for at the same time, but we had been approached to by Tim Spencer, the RCA Victor Records, to do a album for Victor, mm-hmm. and they were looking for materials and some of the things that Tim Spencer suggested to do in the garden, maybe two or three hymns, and some of the current Weatherford music, and that And I think I did about 6 or 8 arrangements on there. And it was a combination of what they had been singing and the new stuff coming. And the new stuff coming to me was from Audrey Meyer, who had also was at the cathedral at the time, and it was just an explosion of music for me from all these sources. And it all came together at that time, and it came together on that Victor record, which was which astounded us. We didn't know it was as good as it was.
Mm.
Henry Slaughter, my guest today on Daniel Britt and Friends. Here's another one of those cuts from the album, Slaughter Writes Imperial Sing.
I pray to the Lord each day that the answer came. I searched and searched from day to day to know in my heart that I was saved. I wanted to know the answer for sure. So when God's Spirit spoke to me, this is the hour you can be free. I called on the Lord that night, then the answer came.
The answer came.
The answer came while I was kneeling there in prayer.
The answer came.
The answer came. I felt His mighty saving power when the Savior came and saved my soul. Because the angry billows rolled, I prayed to the Lord each day that the answer came.
Soul, the answer would come. And sure enough, as I knelt to pray, God came and took all my heartaches away. I'm glad in my soul each day that the answer came.
The answer came.
The answer came while I was kneeling there in prayer.
The answer came.
The answer came. I felt His mighty saving power.
A lot of gospel music, you know, uses the four chords and a cloud of dust type thing. You got your mm-hmm. your one, your four, then your two, then your five, and it's kind of a repetition of that kind of progression of chords.
Yeah.
But, you know, these songs and What a Friend Is He and these songs you were writing seem to just have a much more creative progression of chords and arrangement. And so I'm sure that's what gives a lot of this stuff its longevity. And as you look at other songs, including the one that Elvis recorded, If the Lord Wasn't Walking By My Side. I mean, it's full of energy and just a unique sound. Tell me about that one.
Well, I wrote that while I was at the cathedral, and I think that came from, I heard a black group singing the words, If the Lord Wasn't Walking By My Side, and
yeah.
I thought, hey, that's a great title. I just heard it one time on the radio.
Yeah.
And I picked up a theme on it and wrote that and we were looking for spirituals, and we could find solid, good music and stuff. Also, really, the music that the Weatherford sang, if we'd have been all night singers of the day, all night singers were not attracted to what we were doing.
Mm.
We were in another realm. We had to do music that was suitable for television. And to be done, not necessarily on the stage, but for good listening, and not necessarily for all night singing type of hype that you had to have, which we call screaming and hollering a lot of it.
Yeah, right.
And
right.
Showmanship, and we had to do what was suitable for church, and that was and do good music and people good listening music. And if it hadn't been for the cathedral and that atmosphere there, I don't think any of the black I would have developed.
Yeah.
In fact, I wouldn't have been interested in going in the first place because I was interested in pursuing something other than the all night singing music of that day. I just feel like I've done that, and now that's boring to me. I want to, and like you say, creative people want to move on to something that's not boring.
Yeah,
and I was doing music, and my heyday up there was not boring musically.
Yeah, it's true.
It was exciting and thrilling to me. In fact, that was the thing that I enjoyed doing the most, is writing music and writing arrangements and then hearing it done well.
Yeah. Henry Slaughter, and one of my favorite songs by him, and this one's performed by him, too. He wrote it, performed it here at the Ryman Auditorium. Let's go, Gaither Homecoming, friends, If the Lord Wasn't Walking By My Side.
I don't know just what I'd do if Well, I was drifting.
I was drifting on the sea of despair.
And I was wondering.
I was wondering in this old world of care.
That Jesus found me.
Jesus found me in my sinful plight.
He heard me pray.
He heard me pray on my knees at night.
But now I'm singing.
Now I'm singing a brand new song.
Because I'm happy.
Because I'm happy as I go along.
I don't know.
Tears fill my eyes.
What would I do?
What would I do when it's my time to die?
I'd be lonely, discouraged, burdened up the way.
If the Lord wasn't walking by my side every day.
Well, I'd be friendless.
I'd be friendless, all alone and blue.
I'd be so helpless.
I'd be helpless, wouldn't know what to do.
And I don't know.
I don't know just what I'd do.
Well,
if the Lord wasn't walking by my side. What would I do?
What would I do when the tears fill my eyes?
What would I do?
On the side of the day, but I'd be
friendless, I'd be friendless all alone, and
I'd be so helpless.
I'd be helpless, wouldn't know what to do.
And I don't know.
I don't know just what I'd do.
Well,
if the Lord wasn't walking by my side every day,
if the Lord
wasn't walking
by my side,
wasn't walking by my
side of the day. Well, I'd be friendless.
I'd be friendless, all alone and blue.
I'd be so helpless.
I'd be helpless, wouldn't know what to do.
And I don't know.
I don't know just what I'd do.
But
if the Lord wasn't walking by my side every day.
If the Lord
wasn't walking
by my side.
Wasn't walking by my side.
Henry Slaughter. You're listening to Daniel Britt and Friends, and Henry's my guest today.
Well, the Cathedral of Tomorrow is what we've been talking about, and your time there, and also from that church was birthed a quartet, probably one of the most famous quartets, I would say up there with the ranks of the Blackwoods and the Statesmen, and that was the Cathedrals.
Yes, I would think so.
Yeah.
When they came into existence, the Weatherfords left the cathedral to travel.
Okay.
They left there as far as a home base and traveling out doing all night singings and traveling and apart from the cathedral. They were still guests there. But then I was retained. I left the Weatherfords to go to become the music director of the cathedral.
Okay.
And I did that 2 years. And from that, that's where Jake, they knew about my work at the with the Weatherfords, and my writing was at a peak at that time, and I'd read some two or three songs, If the Lord Would Walk By My Side, and I'll Be There, and then the answer came where we were Southern gospel hits, and so Jake pegged me to kind of do the arranging in that with the Imperials. I was given to, hey, your job is to gather the material and arrange it, and we'll sing it. And so I had a complete range of music when I went with the Imperials.
Part of the Imperials' beginnings, and of course that group was a trendsetting group. So here we're talking about yet another group that was moving into even a different decade and what would develop even a different sound for Christian music. And
yes.
And I can't help but think, you know, the creativity of yourself, Jake Hess, Armin Morales. I mean, you guys had some people with lots of experience under their belt and a lot of ideas. And were those ideas always on the same page, or did sometimes you have a different idea than Jake had?
No. Everything that I laid before them, you know, they were all for it. In fact, they expected me to be the music director.
Hmm. Yeah.
And I could tell that Jake wanted it to go. He knew that the all night singing thing was coming to a fast end, as they knew it.
Yeah.
And that something had to be done to create a new audience, expand the audience, or they were in trouble. And he just felt like, all of us felt the same way, that if we could not do something new and creative and expand the audience, of Christian music, gospel music, that we did not want to continue in the pace, in the plan, in the way that was going, because we knew that was going to come to an end. So we were out. We were out ahead to do it a new thing, and maybe it was too much a desire, and maybe too much so that we tried. They saw us as leaving the traditions of gospel music and trying to create something else. Which I think was probably a mistake too. That we had to do both, really.
Yeah.
And but all the guys were talented in themselves. And I think the proof that within, I was with them 3 years, and at the end of that 3 years, we'd done what we could do. We had not necessarily enlarged the audience of gospel music, and we had made a mark. There's no question about it. And a trend that really, I think, has set a standard that they most of them felt like, if that's the way we're going to go, we can't keep pace with that. And so then the quartet financially, and you know, they had a place, but it wasn't going into rising. And then when the contemporary music, or the hootenanny music, or the folk music came, and in the pop world,
right?
They followed in the natural trends of that, and went into the contemporary world.
Slaughter writes Imperial Scene. Here's another on Daniel Britt and Friends.
This is Daniel Britt and Friends.
To
from the album we've been hearing a lot of cuts from today, Slaughter Writes, that would be Henry Slaughter, Imperial Sing, and what a legendary group in Christian music, gospel music, the Imperials, and a legendary guy, Henry Slaughter, my guest right now.
When you were with the Imperials, were you still in and around the Ohio area, or did you?
No, we lived in Nashville, Tennessee.
In Nashville, okay.
First, started in Atlanta, Georgia, and then we were there maybe a year, and close to a year, and then came to Nashville.
And so after the Imperials, did you pretty much stay in the Tennessee, in that region?
Yes.
Yeah. And
I took a part-time job with a church music director and working sessions. Recording sessions and writing. In those days, that's when I wrote the piano course, and that proved to be the real successful.
Yeah.
Did know it. And then this fellow up in Indiana, I believe his name is Bill Gaither. I believe that's right, Bill Gaither.
Right. Yeah.
and I was wondering, hey, what's next for me? Bill was wondering what's next for him.
Yeah.
And he decided, well, we're just going to do what we do. And Hazel and I and Doug, all three of us, we were at a crossroads and said, hey, we don't know what we're going to do. Let's just come together and do what we're doing together and see where it takes us. And things opened up for all of us.
Yeah. Well, your instrumental work, obviously, through that period after the Imperials, and you and your wife as a team certainly has made a mark. And so here we are today and talking to you there in your home there in Tennessee. And so what's life like now? I mean, are you still writing? Are you still doing college and things?
I write, but it's getting hard to get off the piano bench. Some of it stays in the piano bench. I've got songs. I got a stock of stuff in the files.
Yeah, yeah.
And for a while I tried to get some demos and set out for a few. And we got a few things.
Yeah,
but I have found out that all through it, I had to be with the group. I had to, and my stuff was really most all of it had to be. It's not something they jumped up at when they first heard it.
Yeah, yeah.
But after they, even with the Weatherfords, they said, "Hey, we're going to do this," and by the time they learned it, they fell in love with it. They liked it, and it was not something that hit you quickly. But the more they listened to it, the better they liked it, and it found a place. I'm still that way. And I had to be with the group and show it to them and not prove it to them. But after a while, and teach it to them.
Yeah, right.
A lot of them felt like that what I was writing was too hard for them to sing. Even Bill and Gloria, a lot of times we would say to us that we would sing more of your music, but. You know, they didn't sing that complicated music at that time. They were singing very simple music.
Right.
And but I guess maybe I was leaning a little bit too much. And the strange thing about it, Hazel and I just graduated on being in simple music. And I take pride in this, that people listen to the music and they feel like, well, that's easy until they start singing it. And they feel like it's, which tells me, that it's got more quality in it as music, and that there's a musician, but people who listen to it don't let that disturb them because that's music on a different level, and I take pride in that. And so I really write, and I could not attract any of the groups, and I sent out the songs, and I still have some, and I think I got some of the best stuff I've ever written in my files, but I don't know if anybody will ever. I was hoping that somebody would come along that I could say, take this stuff and go with it, but there's nobody. There's nobody showed, and the groups are not looking for that type of thing.
Right.
They're looking
right.
for what people are jumping up and down about now.
Well, it really is a gold mine of not, you know, of course, the gospel. When you put that message to it, it just soars through the roof. But just from the musical, the art form, the creativity I've heard in your writing really has made a mark. In fact, Gospel Music Hall of Fame inducted you back in, 2006?
Yeah.
And that kind of that makes you feel good. People take notice.
Yeah, I am really delighted, though I haven't been active in quartet, like Southern gospel music as we know it, since I left the Imperials. But I have not left my roots and background. That's what I am. And I think that we moved on with the times, and And I let the industry of gospel music dominate me, but I tried to keep pace with what was going on generally in the church world. That's why things fit so well with the Gaithers, because we were in the church world, and we were motivated by what the church is hearing.
And that was just
a completely different audience of people. It overlapped, of course. But the things that we were doing with the Gaithers were not main street Southern gospel at all.
Right.
And so, it proved to be, as time went on, it proved to be more basic than the people thought. And it took a while for them to find out that what you were doing, our folks will buy too. And I think one of the major groups that did that was the Spears. Spears saw that.
Yeah.
And they became more receptive to the stuff that Gaither was doing, and then the other groups, some of the other groups, MacDuff Brothers and some of the others,
right,
who saw real value in it. And the others didn't see it until He Touched Me came there, until it was done, got old in the church, and they began to take it up and say, oh, yeah. And so we felt, and the game, Bill's thing, all of that was at the head of the move of what was happening in the Christian world.
Yeah.
And the Southern gospel kind of were coming along later. And of course, we passed through that era now, and all of us are kind of asking, what goes with this new music? You know? I think all of us, and I think Bill and Gloria and I would tell you that all of us had a window. Well, I had a window of 50s to the 80s.
Yeah. Yeah,
when it opens, and the 50s have started with it, but I really didn't connect into the fullness of it until even after the Imperials, to feel how my niche, and I really feel like the 60s and 60s and 70s were my peak decades. In the 80s, I was beginning to, you know, it was the music and its trends were all moving away from me. And every decade, it seemed like it moves farther away from who I am. So I am grateful that I was with the music of the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, and 80s. And then by the 90s, I have been since then in the praise and worship music. It's been my thing.
Henry's unique style at the piano is one that's often been imitated, but never quite mastered in the exact same way Henry has it here. Listen.
Henry Slaughter, and of course, you can't talk about Henry without talking about Hazel and so many years of marriage. And obviously, people, especially people who are married, are always looking for examples of how to stick with it.
Hey, on that, let me interrupt you there,
yeah,
because we're coming up on our 60th wedding anniversary.
Right.
And we're thinking about doing a Henry and Hazel 60th anniversary tour to show people that people can be married and don't kill each other after 60 years of marriage.
I've got a friend who says that he's going to write a Christian marriage book, and it's only going to be two words: don't leave, no matter what happens.
Hey, that's good. That's
just
good.
Don't leave. And I think there's truth to that, because Bill and Gloria have talked about this. You can't stay married for any length of time without really talking about the tough stuff of life. Yeah, you're going to have rough patches, but you got to stick with it. And so, wow, 60 years, congratulations. And just faithful servants of God in the music field, in the church world, and examples for a godly couple. So our best to you, and thanks for taking your time to talk to us. How can we stay in touch with you?
Right by this phone. I mean, we have a place here that when we came off the road, and we said it's going to be our time, our retreat off the road.
Right.
We're still working some, and then it's going to be our retirement home, and then if we live long enough, it's going to be the old folks' home. That's where we're up here, set up on the side of a hill overlooking the valley, and a nice, quiet place, and enjoying life to the fullest.
Oh, good. God bless you for what you're doing and what
you've
done.
Thank you. I enjoy talking with you, and I enjoy talking about the goodness of the Lord over the years.
You've been listening to Daniel Britt and Friends. Each week, Daniel brings you exciting music, conversation, and news updates from the world of Southern Gospel. You can hear many of the interviews, again, online at danielbritt.com. Make a date next week for Daniel Britt and Friends.